Giggles, banter, throat-clearing sounds really mattered in ways we just weren't ready for, particularly when it comes to assessment.
Mm-hmm.
We had rubrics and criteria ready to go. Evaluating the podcast, we both hoped, would require a decent learning curve, sure, but it wouldn't reduce our GTAs to tears.
Surprise all the
Don't
time.
Be mean.
It was like, sitting in my like boxers and a t-shirt, like with a stack of my.
Not
to
get too far.
My,
in your office.
No, no.
I was gonna say, dude.
At Mac's apartment, like Otis, my dog is next to me, and like I got my headphones in, and Mac comes in, and it's like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Yes." It's so beautiful.
Admissions like Tony's here, along with stuff like, my students hate hearing their own voices, and it's such a performance, and it's so weird to grade these, started to teach us something important about evaluation. It's visceral, embodied.
Paragraph, and like they indent a paragraph on a page. I assume they know what they're doing, but like I know they don't always think about that. It's like, oh, it's been six lines, I should probably indent. Whereas, like, when they have, like, sound, I know, like, they thought, like, this would be a sweet time to incorporate sound. I might have no idea why they thought it was a good option, probably is a horrible option, but they thought about that, and, like, they took the skills to do that. Versus, like, oh, I've written a paper so many times, like, this should be the title, because it's always just English 101, right. Paper 2. Like, there's less, like, thinking, because it's become so methodical, where the podcast is still, like, new, and they're still, like,
They're still getting that
assessment, and it seemed like we had giggles. I like this. You did it. So, yo, I'm Swim Shady.
Yeah.
And you're a cuddle.
Yeah. So,
we have this hunch that the assessment, when you're sitting there, like, working on assessment, like, how am I going to evaluate this? When the voice is in your ear, in a sense, their whole body's there. Like,
yeah.
It's really embodied. It's kind of been...
It's easier to like give a shit when I can like I got a couple formal ones and I was like this is a good job, like you did what I told you to do, but like the giggling, it just like I can still hear her giggle, and it like maybe wasn't necessary for the podcast, but like it made sense for her voice. Like I wouldn't have thought about the library the same way had she not like made that little giggle, and like hearing that, it just makes it more human, and I can relate to the investigation more. Like, I am just as invested as she is, because, like, granted, I know her, but I feel like I maybe not would have cried at yours. I don't cry a lot, but you do
Jerry
cry
Maguire
often.
When it, like, they play repeats on TV. I'm like,
maybe I would have also, like, felt emotion. I listened to that same podcast. I wouldn't have teared up, but, like, I think it's like a universal thing, like just hearing someone's voices a lot more than like reading it.
Right, and that was a problem for me though, because like how embodied it is, like it removes all objectivity. Like
I
just think
to give
like
everyone A's.
Yeah, well, because you tried and you're like you're here and you're so brave. It's like here, just get exceptional.
In a car here.
So that was a problem for me. Like I had a very difficult time attempting to be objective about assessment.
Because you're just so blown away that they made a podcast.
I'm just so goddamn like, proud that exactly right? they did that risk. That's a huge risk, even though I was like, you have to take this risk. Right? Like it was that was I guess.
And in our conversation with Cindy Self, she echoed a lot of what our GTAs discovered.
Oh yeah, that's a wonderful thing, isn't it? These essays or these pieces are so affecting that they can make you weep, or they can make you, you know, pay attention, or they can make you feel vulnerable or feel voyeuristic or feel things that you do not feel with written essays generally, because those written essays have become so tropes and the mechanisms of those written essays have become so invisible, so familiar that they're invisible to you. But because they're so invisible to you, they're always already acting on your consciousness, which is why your TAs feel so...
And this is where the connection broke, and we lost Cindy's call. But what she's saying here is something we didn't really account for, despite all of the planning and obsessive worrying about issues that we knew would come up for our GTAs in terms of control in their classrooms.
Yeah, we were obsessive.
Totally. And I really do think the podcast assignment is as well structured and carefully scaffolded as we could make it for brand new teachers.
Mm-hmm, I think so, too.
But here's the thing. We never thought to say, at least not before the course started, get ready to be pretty vulnerable.
And I don't know why we weren't ready, why we never said it. I mean, Peter Elbow, in some of his foundational work, clearly argues that the voice is produced by the body. Even when it comes to alphabetic texts, as silent as they seem, many readers project some sense of orality, some sense of intonation, rhythm, accent, and so forth. I mean, critique expressivism all you want, but it did generate a kind of new or different excitement and anxiety. Composition teachers got to hear from their students. They got to listen to them convey, or I guess express, a person with a history and a body.
You mean read their students, though?
Yeah, I do.
But you're right. Expressivism did seem to draw all kinds of folks towards the relationships between writing and teaching.
Yeah.
And certainly assessment, too.
Yeah, yeah.
The expressivists in the 80s were grappling with how to evaluate, how to read personal writing, or writing that seemed to embody the student's true and authentic voice.
Mm-hmm.
So this tension regarding evaluation isn't new, but the voice in a podcast is nowhere near a metaphor. Elbow, of course, was talking about voices physical, embodied. The podcast and the actual sound of student voices suddenly makes expression show up differently for us.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Maybe we can call it a new expressivism.
That'd be heaps better than a post-expressivism. We do, I think, have to be a little careful here. Elbow might go too far in thinking about the voice or sound as somehow more natural or primary than words on a page. Derrida helped us worry about the supremacy of the voice a long time ago.
Sure, sure. And the issue here is that it's hard not to see a normalized hearing speaking body in what Elbow says.
Well, I learned that really quick. A few graduate students and I had deaf or really hard of hearing students in our classes. What we had to do was rethink the kinds of bodies our assignment assumed. For the most part, this meant thinking more universally. And my student, for example, wrote a detailed podcast script that she annotated with emotional tone and images, stuff beyond alphabetic text. The GTA students did similar stuff.
It reminds me of what James Wilson and Cynthia Lewicki Wilson kind of warned us about in their book Embodied Rhetorics.
Okay.
Rhetoric, and I think this is more commonplace now, is closely aligned with the body and that rhetorical arguments of all kinds appear in embodied forms. So it's key that the voice is embodied, not metaphorical.
Elbow is onto something, I think. Like, actual voices are produced by actual bodies. I mean, he says, writing is really a voice spread out over time, not marks spread out in space. This was never clearer to me than when we had to think through ways to make this project as universal as possible.
In a podcast, writing speaks.
Yep.
It's then recorded and shared with others. And in other words, podcasts are grounded in the body and require expression of self and others. And this exposedness and vulnerability mediated through voice wasn't exactly what my first quarter freshmen were interested in.
But podcasting doesn't really give you that opportunity.
Which
not
opportunity?
As much. To be someone you're not. Because it's your literal voice. You know, it's not like voicing. It's your literal voice. And you have less to hide behind. Especially because people don't want to do multiple takes because they just want to do it once and get done with it, which is nice. It's probably nice as the instructor too, because you get to go, oh wait, like this is how they really feel about this. And this is how their voice sounds when they're not in a public space, which is, you don't really get to hear that, you know, when your friends talk to you one-on-one in a private area, and then they talk in a public classroom, their literal voice sounds different. That's probably interesting to hear on podcasts. I don't know. That would, for me, I'd
totally
be
interested
in that.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on, and I think you just put words to a feeling that I have all the time.
Yeah.
Intimate.
Is there ever a time when you're listening to a student and you're like, whoa, this doesn't even really sound like this.
Especially the student who doesn't talk in class.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh, I haven't heard Corey all quarter, and here's 7 minutes of his voice.
And
in my office.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, and I, as an RA, I tell all my residents, go talk to your professors, because when, especially if you're doing, what did you say, word on a page writing? If you're doing essay writing for finals or exams of any sort, I think it's super important to talk to your professors so that they can hear your voice, kind of make distinctions about the way you talk so that they can read it in your voice when they're reading your paper, because they can understand you better.
You tell?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because I think that's huge. And I was never told that, and I think it's very important.
what I hear my students saying connects right back up to electricity. In electricity, the body and the voice is the very ground of composition. And like I basically said earlier, and a little like elbow intuited, it's the site of rhetorical action. Analysis and abstract reasoning is, of course, widely important.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's just that Arroyo and Ulmer and Brooke and Shipka and Cindy Self and so many others have noticed the values inherent in reason or something like analytic thinking that literacy requires are just not enough.
Yeah, electricity names the multiplicity of meaning. It supports intuition, imagination, emotion, and reaction in ways that are just not traditionally valued in university environments rooted in analytics.
I'm super convinced that no matter how analytic or distant our students tried to sound in their final podcasts, their physical voices disallowed our GTA's desire to distance themselves as evaluators.
Right.
They had their students' voices in their ears. Huh. It's not exactly possible to keep the object of analysis at arm's length because the object is being composed and spoken through the writer.
Yeah.
The students begin, no matter what, from their own subjective position and only then hook that into any objective history or topics.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing and really challenging.
The work disallows an othering that essay writing might encourage.
That fact is what I think made evaluation so hard for GTAs.
It does. I saw my students become aware of their voice and their composition all at once. Mm. Their position as the writing subject was showing up alongside or adjacent to their objects of study. One of my students even opened their podcast with, "I have a confession to make." This little recorded line captured our class's attention in a way that the same line written in an essay might come across as awkward.
Oh, yeah.
It also, and like so many of our GTAs pointed out, transformed the student's work into an embodied, vulnerable experience for me as an evaluator. There the student was, via my earbuds, seemingly standing in my office.
The act of recording our own voice, editing and manipulating that voice, and then sharing it with other writers and podcasters offers our students a chance to hear themselves, to offer themselves up to connections and networks of meaning, and then get themselves back, strangely.
So not only could my students not distance themselves from their writing, but I couldn't distance myself from my students' voices either.